It is Friday, October 5th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. All offer local shopping opportunities through NWA Deal Piggy and Ozark Deal Piggy. Registration and more information are available online at nwadealpiggy.com.
In about 10 minutes on Ozarks, why the summer drought continues to be a problem for area ranchers and farmers. A low production of hay means trouble. And our local food ambassador is back. Teresa Maurer is bringing along a fall stew, complete with recipe.
But first, the Arkansas Supreme Court yesterday rejected a ballot measure that would legalize casinos in several counties. The wording of Nancy Todd's proposed constitutional amendment was changed after voters signed petitions to qualify it for the ballot. That's why the state's high court ruled the signatures invalid, thus rejecting her amendment. Todd says she changed the wording to suit initial objections that voters wouldn't be aware of the full effects of the law. She says she's not sure what she'll do next.
I do live in Arkansas. I am an Arkansan, so I'm not going anywhere, but I don't know what I could have possibly presented to them that would have accommodated them. I mean, I don't mention the tracks. I get the screws put to me, and I do mention the tracks. The Supreme Court doesn't like it, so, I mean, I've got to figure out the answer to it. Most things you can figure out what you did right and what you did wrong, and I'm not sure what I did wrong here.
The proposed amendment will remain on the ballot, however. Election officials will not count its votes.
Rain or shine tomorrow, the 12th annual Northwest Arkansas International Festival will take place in downtown Rogers, provided there's no lightning in the area. The Rogers Old Area Chamber of Commerce hosts the event, and Brad Phillips is the Vice President of Marketing Communications at the Chamber.
We will continue with the event unless there's lightning, but we did expect around 10,000, which makes it now the largest internationally themed festival in the region. We can expect a lot of food. There's going to be food vendors, food trucks, and we'll have People Choices Awards for both. We'll have a kids zone where they can enjoy a petting zoo, camel rides, train rides. And there's a fashion show at 1 o'clock where you can see all the different cultures that live in the area, their costumes, the intricate details and colors that they have.
The festival started years ago at Lake Atalanta and was hosted by the City of Rogers, but the event eventually moved to Frisco Station in downtown Rogers.
The Chamber saw it and felt it was an opportunity, an event with such potential, that we took it over several years ago and have grown it into what it is today. I think what makes it popular is it's a chance for different cultures, different populations that move to the area to kind of get a feel for their costumes and their foods and a lot of games for the kids. The entire family can enjoy something here and have a good time.
Phillips says that the festival is emblematic of the diversity now inherent in Northwest Arkansas.
In Rogers alone, over 30% of the population now is Hispanic. We have a growing Marshallese population from the Marshall Islands in the Springdale area, and in Walmart's bringing in a lot of IT people from India. So we're growing in diversity, and this event's all about that. That's the mission, is to help people learn and experience different cultures that live here in the population of Northwest Arkansas.
And if you're trying to find something to do tonight, Dr. Jane Goodall will speak at 7 o'clock in Barnhill Arena on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. The lecture is free to the public, and people aiming to attend can begin lining up outside the south entrance of Barnhill Arena at 5 o'clock, and doors open at 6. Security precautions will be in place, so prepare to pass through a security checkpoint, and keep in mind that Dr. Goodall has requested no flash photography be taken during the lecture.
Some Fayetteville residents tomorrow will have the opportunity to get rid of large, bulky items, too large to fit into a normal trash cart. Bulky Waste Cleanup Day for Ward 1 in Fayetteville will be held from 7 until 2 at Root Elementary on Mission Boulevard and at the Solid Waste and Recycling Center on Happy Hollow Road.
Tonight's weather forecast calls for overcast conditions with a 30% chance of rain and a low of 37 degrees in northwest Arkansas. In the Arkansas River Valley, expect overcast conditions with a 40% chance of rain with a low of 45 degrees. Tomorrow, expect mostly cloudy skies with highs in the low to mid-50s and a 40% chance of rain in northwest Arkansas and a 60% chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, expect cloudy conditions with a 20% chance of rain and lows in the upper 30s.
The This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the listening area. How are you on this Friday?
I am well this morning. It looks a little cloudy here.
Well, we have had, if not significant amounts of rain, certainly periods of significant showers so far this morning, some lightning and thunder as well. This week, some new jobless numbers were released. What can you tell me about that?
Well, again, we're seeing, if we're looking at Northwest Arkansas and the Fort Smith area, it's the continued story, Kyle. The picture continues to improve in Northwest Arkansas, and it is not improving in the Fort Smith area. The interesting thing, I think the headline number for Northwest Arkansas, and these can be seasonal things shifting from July to August. We often see them. But the number of unemployed in Northwest Arkansas fell to 12,703, and that's an estimate from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And that's down just one, to be short, of 3,000 compared to August. So that's a good – so compared to last August – there are 3,000 fewer unemployed in Northwest Arkansas, a good number. And that's part of what helped push the August jobless rate down to 5.3%. And it that's the fifth month of this year that the jobless rate in Northwest Arkansas has been below 6%. So that that's a good number. I mean, anyone keeping score up there, that's a good score. In Fort Smith, it's just almost the exact opposite. They're seeing their labor force continue to shrink, and they're not seeing good gains, good shifts in terms of the number of unemployed. So for two regions to be so geographically connected, it's definitely a different picture.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, depending on where you define these two regions beginning and ending geographically,
right.
They're within
right.
50 miles of each other. Could the Fort Smith region get some sort of benefit from the Northwest Arkansas prosperity?
Well, they should, and I think there is some of that. I know that there are companies in Fort Smith who have offices in Northwest Arkansas, but in terms of where those jobs are counted, I think that's what matters. There were a couple subdivisions in North Crawford County, which is part of the Fort Smith region, that benefited because people wanted to live there, but they worked either in Fayetteville or Springdale, so there's some of that. It's never been documented. It's a lot of anecdotal evidence, but I think it could help, and I think you see folks like Paul Harville at the Fort Smith Regional Chamber of Commerce doing everything he can to work with the Northwest Arkansas Council to do some of that. I think the effort to deepen the Arkansas River Channel, you have civic and business leaders in both metro areas pushing for that. So there are some things that they're trying to do, but it won't be anything that will happen overnight.
No. We often talk about jobless rates and home sales numbers, retail sales, but there's an interesting figure that was released Tuesday that your reporter Kim Souza had a story about, and that is bank deposits. And it grew nationally and grew in Northwest Arkansas. What, if anything, can we take from this?
There aren't a lot of other places to put money, and people are holding on to their money because they're uncertain of what to do with it. So with interest rates so low, there isn't a lot to do with your money unless you want to go play in the stock market. Treasuries don't provide the kind of yield that they used to. So the deposits are up. Now, the interesting thing, and it's no surprise, and these are numbers, Kyle, that are released every year from the FDIC, but Arvest market share in Northwest Arkansas has grown from just a little over 41% in 2012 in 2010, up to a little over 51% in 2012. That's a healthy increase. And overall, for all statewide, Arvest has a little over 12% of deposits. Now, in the Fort Smith area, it's the First National Bank Corp, which owns several banks in the area, Citizens Bank and Bank in Salisaw, and they have well over 20% of the market in the Fort Smith area. But in terms of deposit growth, there is really not a lot of places to put your money, and folks are just holding on to it because they're not sure what the economy is going to do next.
Well, haven't we heard for the past few years that Americans aren't saving enough? So isn't that a good sign?
Well, there can be too much saving. It's that on the other hand kind of thing.
Mm.
When you're not putting money, I mean, consumer spending accounts for roughly 70% of economic activity. So if consumers aren't spending, if businesses aren't investing, if they're just sticking their earnings in CDs and just waiting to see what happens, then that can be a slowdown on the economy. And Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke said as much, that that's the other side of the issue on keeping interest rates low. And he's recognized that that does have can have, if it's held too long, can have a dampening effect on consumer spending.
Finally, if you go to thecitywire.com right now, you'll see that the logo is in pink, and the City Wire has started a Paint Your Page Pink campaign.
Yes, so we're just encouraging businesses, individuals, organizations, anyone with a website in the two regions, well, any website anywhere, to paint your page pink. And, you know, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we know that putting a pink logo on your website is not going to make anybody feel better. It's not going to lead to an overnight cure for cancer, but it's the awareness issue. And it's like Patricia Brown, who works at the City Wire, who had a battle with cancer 7 years ago and won that. She's now facing a second battle. You know, her point was, you never know how the smallest little gesture will cause someone to think about going to get a test or getting a mammogram. And you know, if something like that can cause people to check themselves or go get a test and it saves their life, it's worth it. And we're trying to make it very easy at the CityWire. We have a page with logos on them. All you got to do is drag and drop and use them. You're free. Anyone's free to use them. It's very, very simple, quick, and easy. And all we ask, too, is that you just fill out a form so we know who's using it, because we would like to be able to report to media outside the area that we had a certain number of folks do this. So, it's, again, it's easy to just drag a logo and place it on your website.
You can find that right now at thecitywire.com.
Yes, sir.
And don't forget, tomorrow on television, KXNWA at 8 o'clock, and Sunday morning at 6 on KFSM, The City Wire on television.
Yes, Michael, with Cal Kellens also.
Yes, watch. And I'm talking with Bob Stevenson from UAFS about Dromnium, a new play. More about that on Ozarks at Large next week as well.
Right.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com. Michael, have a great weekend.
All right, thanks. Kyle, stay dry.
Before this week's presidential debate, both campaigns tried to lower expectations by saying their guy was a lousy debater, so then he could look great on Wednesday night. Well, the Romney campaign sure did that, but the Obama campaign was really just trying to warn us. I'm Peter Sagal. There's really no way at this point we can raise your expectations of this week's news quiz. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, now at its new time, Saturday mornings at 9, right after Weekend Edition. And the TED Radio Hour can be heard Sundays at noon. For more information about KUAF's weekend programming changes, KUAF.com.
Although Northwest Arkansas and the Fort Smith regions have received nearly 10 inches of rain in the past 2 months, the area is still suffering the effects of a drought that has affected the area for 2 years. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis takes a look at how the drought has impacted cattle farming in the area.
Although the temperatures are beginning to drop as we move into fall, farmers are still feeling the heat of the drought that has plagued Arkansas for much of the year. The biggest problem for farmers is the lack of hay produced during the year. John Jennings is a professor of forage management with the University of Arkansas Extension Service in Little Rock. He says that the entire year has been fraught with setbacks for cattle producers looking for hay with which to feed their stock.
Started out with a warm season in the spring, so everything was coming on early, and then it immediately turned cool and then dry, and that slowed down the forage growth. And then it was hot and dry through the summer, so it prevented any forage growth. We had armyworms in the spring, which took out some of our spring pasture and spring hay crop. And then the fall rains that we finally started getting, the armyworms came in and started taking that again, too. So it's been a real challenge, one following the next.
Brian Fuchs with the National Drought Mitigation Center says that each drought is unique, characterizing this year's drought as several dry spells embedded with a few periods of precipitation.
I think this year is a good example of that, where we did have some dryness, recovered somewhat through the winter and early spring, and actually had some fairly good rains, and then it just really went dry and hot through the summer. And then you throw in a tropical event here this fall already, and it just makes the landscape change so abruptly. And there's parts of the state that really have not seen much of the relief this fall so far and are still waiting to see if that drought is going to break. So, you know, the conditions that we're seeing have been unique in the fact that not only with the dryness that we had, which was very severe, but we also had the intense heat, and that's happened for two summers in a row now.
But while the rains and tropical storm events of the past 2 months have brought some relief to the drought, Jennings says that the rain is too late for a fall hay crop, which would have eased the strain of increasing feed costs for farmers.
It's making some pasture, but it's not making enough growth for hay harvest. There's a difference. It has to be at a certain harvestable size before you can really cut it for hay. The weather cooled off along with that rain, and for our warm season grasses, where the primary hay crop would come from for this late in the year, can't grow during the cool temperatures.
According to a study released last week by the University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture, the cost of hay delivered to fields increased by more than 50%. That same study gives a conservative estimate that the drought has already cost cattle ranchers $128 million, and that 3% of ranchers surveyed planned on selling all of their livestock. With little hay produced in the spring and summer, no fall hay crop, and rising feed prices, farmers have taken to trimming their cattle head counts, and some have even sold their entire herds. Alan Hales of the Fort Smith Livestock Auction says that the sellouts will have a noticeable impact on the cattle markets going forward into next year.
We've had a dairyman that's been in business and his family for about 50 or 60 years, and they're completely liquidating the dairy because the milk isn't bringing enough to cover the feed cost. And it's really a shame, and what's going to happen is, just like the hogs and the cattle, the numbers are going to be down severely, and we're going to see eventually that's going to go to the marketplace. We're going to see less supply, and depending on the demand, if the demand's there, then the price is going to go up.
The cattle market is similar to most other markets. Prices at the market are subject to supply and demand. With excess supply comes decreased demand and decreased prices, but when demand at the dinner table exceeds the supply in the field, that's when prices at the grocery store soar. To comprehend the dynamics of the cattle market, one must understand that many ranchers plan the breeding cycles of their mama cows so that the calves will be at a mature size when market prices are best in the fall. Many ranchers plan on having calves in the early months of the year so that the calves will be large enough to sell for reasonable profit in the following fall. According to the UA study, 73% of farmers surveyed sold calves earlier than in a typical year. Hales says that cattle prices are already up because of recent activity in the market.
We're already seeing that the marketplace on these replacement cows and heifers that are bred, you know, going to have calves, we're seeing them already $200 to $300 a higher a pair. If we have grass next spring and the numbers down like I think they're going to be, we're going to see some of the highest price stock cows we've seen in a long time to buy back. And that's what's dangerous. When you go out there and give $1,500, $1,800 for a pair, that's a lot of money, and you put your interest and feed in that. You've got to get quite a bit for that calf. So it's a risky business. It really is.
Harold Sargent of the Farmers Livestock Association in Springdale says that this year there have been quite a few farmers selling their entire herds.
That's about stopped now. You know, I mean, there for a couple of months, there were a lot of people selling their entire herds. But, you know, since it started raining and the grass is replenished, well, the complete sellout has stopped.
But when the sale of whole herds has been avoided, other drastic measures have been taken. According to the UA study, 49% of ranchers surveyed reduced their herds by selling more mature cows than usual, and 41% of ranchers also said that they plan to sell more mature cows in the fall, in addition to having sold replacement heifers that would have otherwise replaced mature cows. But Kent Reading of Interstate 40 Livestock Association in Ozark says that the drought has ended the farming careers of some ranchers.
There'll be a few people that want to restock, but a lot of people that sell out are going to be, some of them are a little older, and they're just going to give it up. They're not going to replenish. They're not going to rebuild their cow herds.
The sell-off of livestock herds is something that Fuchs says the Drought Mitigation Center takes into account when determining the long-term effects of a drought.
Sometimes there's breeding lines that have taken years to accomplish that sometimes get lost in a situation like this. And so to see those stocking rates get back up to where they were, that also will take time because you just don't replenish those numbers overnight.
Although it may be too late for some farmers, Fuchs says that for now, the drought conditions have begun to break.
Right now, what we're looking at going into the fall and winter months is weak El Nino is developing, and what that is doing is typically across the southern tier of the U.S., we see cooler and wetter conditions. And we have seen the heat break, which has been a welcome addition already. And we're really going to have to watch Arkansas into portions of East Texas, southern Missouri, as far as how much recovery we're going to see. We have seen some regular rainfall in parts of that area over the last month or so. Will that maintain itself and lead to further recovery as far as the drought conditions go?
According to the seasonal drought outlook released Thursday by the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, drought conditions across much of the Midwest and West are expected to persist through the end of the year. But the same outlook predicts that drought conditions in Arkansas are expected to continue to improve, though not necessarily disappear entirely, over the next few months. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
It is Friday, the 5th day of October 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Anthony Grajeda.
And with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Too much.
Oh.
There's just too much to do this weekend.
And this is the way it's going to be till maybe January or right before Christmas.
Well, here's the plan.
All right.
I'm going to give you an itinerary.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like mine, you can go buy a copy of What's Up.
Okay.
For a dollar. We get the whole Friday paper.
I was
going to
say, you get a sports section, a news
right.
section, an editorial, yes.
But this will be worth the dollar you didn't pay for it.
Okay.
Tonight,
mm-hmm.
Jane Goodall.
Oh, yes.
At the University of Arkansas. You know, when she arrived in Tanzania in 1960, they didn't know any of the things we know about primates.
Right. The things we take for granted now that we know.
They didn't know they were social. They didn't know that they were meat eaters. They didn't know all kinds of things. Peter Unger, who's an anthropology professor at the University of Arkansas, says from an anthropological perspective, her research literally redefined what it is to be human.
Hmm. Wow.
She will speak at 7 o'clock tonight at Barnhill Arena on the UA campus. Doors open at 6. There's a book signing after her lecture, and it's all free.
Nice.
Now, Saturday, day,
mm-hmm.
South,
mm-hmm.
Puppets in the Park.
Right.
With workshops, a giant puppet pageant, music, juggling, food, 9 to 6:30 at Wilson Park in Fayetteville.
Is this a rain or shine event?
Yes.
Okay.
And Art in the Park,
mm-hmm.
where artists demonstrate and sell their art from 9 to 2 on the north side of Wilson Park.
Okay.
Saturday day, north.
Okay.
There's an international festival from 10 to 4 in downtown Rogers, food,
oh, yeah.
music, cultural exhibits. And from 11 to 2 at the Loch Lomond Recreation Complex in Bella Vista, Wiener Takes All.
I think I may be going to this, actually.
I kind of want to take Lucy. They have a wish you were a dachshund.
My friend is borrowing a dog.
Okay.
We should explain that these are dachshunds that race.
For fun.
Right.
Yes. And you can go and watch, and you can take your dog. Yeah, they don't have, I think probably taking your Great Dane would be frowned upon.
Not a good idea, yeah.
All right, Saturday night, South.
Mm-hmm.
33 Variations.
University of Arkansas.
Last weekend at University Theater, a musicologist's obsession with Beethoven haunts her even as her illness worsens. It's a script by Moises Kaufman. 8 o'clock, tickets are $7 to $16. Saturday night, North. There's this little show that the journalists do every year.
Yes.
It's really hard to explain what it is. Would you like to give that a run, Antoinette?
The best way I've learned to explain it is it's a comedy. It's very much Saturday Night Live style in that there are separate skits poking fun at different issues, different newsmakers, local and national from the last year.
What she said.
It's written and produced and acted by local journalists.
And in the cast this year, in the ensemble, our own Antoinette Grajeda.
Yes.
And you know, you might hear something about Bobby Petrino.
You definitely will hear a couple of things.
You might hear something about the new restrictions at Razorback Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
You might hear something about the Bella Vistans protesting a new supermarket.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's something about strippers.
Isn't there usually?
Yeah, there is. She's right. 7:30 on Saturday night at the Rogers Little Theater. Tickets are $25. Or alternately, you can go to the University of Arkansas Global Campus in Fayetteville and just stay there.
Is that the location of the Seedling
yes,
Film
the
Festival?
Yes, the Offshoot Films yes, Festival. Offshoot. And you can find out more at seedlingfilm.com, or you can follow the poets who are in town for the individual World Poetry Slam. And there's classes and performances through Saturday evening, and you can find out more about that, of course, in What's Up or at iwps.poetryslam.com.
Right. The Haiku Deathmatch was earlier today.
Sorry I missed that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It is that time of year. On Monday, October 8th, the Symphonic Band and Wind Symphony at the University of Arkansas will be on stage at Walton Arts Center, and W. Dale Warren is here with me. It is that time
of year. Kyle, that time indeed.
Does it come quicker
every
year?
Oh, yes. Yes, the older I get, the quicker it comes. I used to say the older I get, the better I was. But now it's the older I get, the quicker it comes. Yeah, it is.
This is a staple, a tradition mid-semester about that the first concerts of the year take place.
We do that on purpose, obviously. It's a midterm concert and then a concert right before finals so that we have the amount of time we need to prepare a full program.
Now, the majority of the musicians that will be on stage have done this before, but you've got a crop that haven't. Some
that's
freshmen.
Absolutely true. I don't have a lot of freshmen, of course, in Wind Symphony, but Chris has got several freshmen that are really spectacular, actually, in symphonic band. So we've got a really great freshman class at the university right now, and our grad class is quite good. So we're really pleased with the mix of old and new.
Well, the Symphonic Band will start things off Monday night.
Indeed. They're going to play the Duke of Marlborough Fanfare by Percy Grainger, setting for brass. It's pretty exciting. Of course, it's vintage Grainger, and it should electrify the house right away. We're going to get their attention, to be sure. Then we go into one of your favorite composers, I know,
yes.
Ralph Vaughan Williams, Flourish for Wind Band, and another staple of the repertoire, and then a piece that a lot of folks may not know by John Barnes Chance, his Elegy. John Barnes Chance is a really famous wind band composer, but we lost him really early based on a lightning strike, actually. And, you know, he had a lot more great music left to write. But this Elegy is powerful and very dark and foreboding.
And then, before the Wind Symphony, and I'm going to let you pronounce this French composer's name.
Darius Milhaud.
Milhaud.
And we're doing his famous Suite Francaise, which, of course, is all about the famous places that you've heard about in France, and the five-movement works based on a different region in France. So it is one of the main staples of the wind band repertoire.
It's lush.
It's like the countryside. Mm-hmm. It is. The topography, the trees, the flora. I mean, it's France. It's what it is. I mean, you go from the beach to, you know, the forest country to the highlands. I mean, it's a stunning piece. All 5 minutes are very different.
Then intermission, then you grab the baton, and you begin with a piece, Megan Miller. I've listened to this.
My summertime is my quest for what's the great new stuff and who are the great new composers, because we in the wind band world tend to want to do stuff that maybe you haven't heard of before. We want to keep composers working, and Megan's 25 years old. And she's a fiddle player, and she'll tell you she's a fiddle player. But I got turned on to this by a really good friend of mine. I said, okay, what's the best thing you've heard lately? And he goes, oh, you got to do Django. And I go, I don't even know who wrote Jingo. So now we got a relationship going. Actually, Megan's brother is in the Walton College of Business.
Really?
Yeah, that's totally coincidence. So she's coming up for the concert to visit brother and to be here for the Arkansas premiere.
How exciting.
Yeah, that's very cool. And she'll do a little pre-concert talk so that everybody can understand it. About what the meaning of Jingo is and the purpose of her writing the piece. But we want to do it since, you know, we're right in the middle of the presidential election and it's about political unrest. Obviously, Jingo is exactly the definition. And so, you know, she's taking a pretty hard stand here on some pretty serious issues.
That's exciting. And the composition itself is a couple years old, if that?
Yes. Well, this particular version is 2011. She wrote it in 2010. It's an orchestra piece, then turned into an absolute wind ensemble, one on a part piece, then a wind symphony piece for a little bit more expanded instrumentation. I think this version is the best one by far, actually.
When it's a composer like that and you're told about this work and you are interested in doing it, do you call her? Do you pick up the phone and just say, hey?
No, I just popped her an email, actually. Yeah. And then she sent me a link to a YouTube that's a virtual. It's not even a real ensemble playing it. It's all, of course, you know, synthesized. But I just went, oh, this is really good. So I ordered the score, started studying the score. I go, oh, we've got to do this. And we're going to open this on the first concert just to kind of – it's got edge. I'll put it that way. And the audience, I think, will really enjoy the different colors and the timbres that she gets.
21st century. Than Holst.
Well, this is our anchor piece for our part of the program, like the Mio is for the symphonic bands. I mean, you can't beat Gustav Holst. Hammersmith is about where he grew up, Hammersmith, England, you know, just 6 miles west of London. And that borough, and it's about the Thames River. I mean, you hear the river, you hear the town, you hear the pubs, you hear the people, you hear Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes. I mean, everything that you would experience if you went there to visit is in this piece, and it's a monumental work. I mean, it's spectacular. Our big piece is this new concerto by Jack Stamp that he wrote for his teacher. And Chow Ragsdale and Fernando Valencia are going to play. And they play everything in the book. I mean, we just rehearsed it. I just came from rehearsal. It's a scream.
Well, Fernando and Chow, of course, too, I've seen them work. And they can play. To them, the world is a percussion instrument.
It is. If you can hit it, it's an instrument. That's exactly right.
Are they frantically moving about?
Frantically. Chow had trouble today making it from the 12 or 13 timpani to the marimba, you know, I mean, just in time to get there to play his licks. And then Fernando's got to navigate the drum set and the vibes and all that sort of thing. So it's a huge setup on the front of the stage. And, you know, it's kind of a dueling banjos deal where you've got, you know, Fernando on one side dueling it out with Chow on the other side. So it's really fun.
And then you'll end it with a composition called Soundings.
You see that it's written in 1997. Well, he never published it. It's got one performance for the commissioning ensemble, and that's it. We're going to be the number two group to play it, and he's finally going to publish it. But we're doing an unpublished version. So it's way hip and cool. Of course, he's the composer in residence for the New York Philharmonic.
Right, right.
So he's used to writing for some pretty good players.
And he has been a conductor of many ensembles as well.
Joe gets around.
Baltimore.
He gets all over the place. Yeah, he's the consummate musician. And I mean, we played one of his pieces in Carnegie, and he came, as a matter of fact. You know, just he couldn't be a more gracious, wonderful human being. And we've played everything he's written for band. I mean, I'm a Turin-aholic, without question. But this piece has got everything, and that's why we're closing with it, because it's just on fire.
You and your education and musical colleagues at the university get a year older.
We do.
The ensembles do not.
That's right. Students don't get older. We do.
Does that make any difference whatsoever for
Tons.
You?
Tons. Oh, tons. The culture. It's where they come from. It's different than where we come from. Of course, I'm much older than you.
No, you're not.
I am quite a bit older. I'm Methuselah's age. But the whole point here is, yes, the students come to us very different generation to generation. There's no question about that. What I really love about this group of students right now is they're so hungry and they're sponges and they want information. They want knowledge. They want to get better. They want to do their best. You don't have to motivate them to go practice and to come prepared and to, you know, be engaged. I mean, rehearsals are a total joy.
Not a bad job, is it?
Not a bad job. Can't imagine anything better, quite frankly.
Monday night, 7:30, Walton Arts Center.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben Affleck says he saw the Jason Bourne film starring his pal Matt Damon.
They are as cool and sexy as a movie could possibly be, whereas I wanted this movie to be very, this is my pitch, very pedestrian film.
Ben Affleck's new true spy story film, Argo, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Saturday with Scott Simon, tomorrow morning at 7. Then at 9, it's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on its new day and time, Saturday mornings at 9 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
And joining me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Teresa Maurer, our local food ambassador. How are you on this fine Friday?
I'm doing great. It's been gorgeous, and I'm looking forward to a little bit more of that.
Might be a little nippy this weekend. Some temperatures dropping into the 30s, upper 30s in parts of the listening area.
I have heard that, but it is October after
that's
all.
That's right. And what's great about that is you have a recipe coming up that's perfect for chillier weather.
Exactly. Uses almost all local food ingredients, too, which makes it even more special.
Excellent. Speaking of local food, that is an emphasis of the Protein, Produce, and Pennies event that's taking place.
Yeah.
Campaign, right.
Yeah, exactly. Last night, Mayor Jordan made a proclamation for Food Day, which actually is extending a month, starting today and going through November 1st. And the City of Fayetteville, Feed Fayetteville, and Seeds That Feed, and a number of other local groups are kind of getting together on a campaign, which, as you said, is Protein, Produce, and Pennies. And there's a drive for donations. So the protein means you could donate some canned tuna or canned chicken. Produce means that you could purchase some extra produce at the market or bring some in of your own. There are people to collect it at the market and get it to the places that help serve hungry people. And then pennies. You know, if you're a kid and you can only donate a few pennies, or if you're a parent and you can donate a few dollars, these groups will be prepared to accept those during the Fayetteville Farmers Market. And I'm sure there's other markets that are having other food-related events.
This Sunday at Greenhouse Grill, yesterday Luke Gramlich on Ozarks at Large explained Tricycle Farms and what they're doing. And Pesto Fest is part of that. There's a contest involved with this.
Yes, and I thought I'd talk just a tiny bit about that. Slow food folks have kind of asked me, when are you guys going to have a contest? Well, Slow Food isn't going to do it, but Tricycle Farms is. And this is at the Greenhouse Grill. And for $5, you can bring a certain amount of your pesto before 6 o'clock, I believe you have to turn it in. And then it will be judged by chefs. And you'll get feedback on it. And there'll be, I think, first, second, and third prizes awarded, which are prizes from local businesses. So that's really, I think, kind of a fun. There is basil at the market right now, garlic, just about all the ingredients you'd need depending on your very special, very own pesto recipe.
Now, I know we don't have a firm answer to the question, what's the latest on possible more markets, winter markets, the Sunday markets? It was discussed at the council meeting Tuesday, but we're far from a firm answer.
Exactly. Really, what you could say is if you imagine a series of gates, the first gate has been opened, and it means that markets are possible. It doesn't mean they are required to be done, must be done, or anything else. We just wanted to have a way for our board of directors to explore some additional options. There is public interest in an evening market, for example, and that's one of the things that was made possible. But we decided while we were talking to the council about it, we'd go ahead and get the realm of possibilities made possible. Again, this is not a must-do requirement. It makes it possible. And we have to have further work by the Planning Commission and the parks and all the other partners that are involved with the Botanical Garden Market to allow that to proceed. It does not in any way affect our jewel in the crown, the square market. We're really trying to make the Botanical Garden a bigger jewel. It is a jewel right now, but there are some opportunities to really grow that. So what the council did was make some more options possible out there.
Stay tuned. All right. I teased at the beginning of our conversation a recipe. You have brought in stew?
I have. Wow. I'm going to call it the Fall Market Stew.
Okay.
And I sort of gave myself some challenges. Once again, have as many local ingredients as possible and preferably take less than an hour from start to finish. This one, I timed it, took me 50 minutes, and that's from chopping up the first onion to ladling out the first bowl of soup.
50.
So that's 50, 5-0.
Okay.
And it's a one-pot thing, so you could do it in your favorite stock pot or cast cast iron skillet, which is what I use, a big deep skillet, just because it's nice in terms of giving you plenty of room. So would you like me to describe the recipe?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, of course, like many recipes, you're going to chop a medium onion. I used a red onion, which gives kind of a nice flavor, but we have lots of different kinds of onions on the market right now. So you could just choose your favorite.
So chop the onion was local.
The onion was local. The garlic was local. 4 cloves of garlic, and you want to chop that up, saute it in a little bit of olive oil. Not local, but if you want to procure it locally, of course you can. 5 minutes on that just to kind of get it softened up. Then you're going to take eggplant and you're going to peel it. It can be a small or medium-sized eggplant. Peel it and cube it. And I think we talked about eggplant last year, and that one of the things that people were – they're never quite sure what to do about what to do with eggplant. So the answer is you can combine it with a lot of other really cool stuff and give it a nice color combination, because eggplant sometimes scares people because of the color. But in this stew, it gives you a flavor and a texture and blends in with lots of different colors. But anyway, you peel the skin and you cube it. You take bell peppers, and we also have lots of colors of bell peppers. Peppers, so you can pick red or gold, whatever you want. Do that in strips. A cup of tomato juice. Now, you can just use your – that is not local, mm-hmm. but you could make your own if you wanted to. I just bought it. You could make it a spicy tomato juice if you want, or just plain, however you feel there.
If you're making your own tomato juice, you're going to be over the 50 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I did take some shortcuts here, and there's one more which I'll tell you about in a minute.
Okay.
A quarter of a cup of red wine. Now, you can do that almost locally with some of the wineries.
I'm going to call that local.
That
if you're
is
getting
local.
It from Altus or mm-hmm. Eureka Springs,
exactly.
Tawnytown, I'm calling that local.
Yep. And red wine is just a wonderful ingredient for any vegetable stew, and it works really well in this one. So once again, there you've got your onion and garlic going, and in the meantime, you're cubing your eggplant, stripping your bell peppers, and you're going to add the eggplant, bell peppers, tomato juice, red wine to the onions and garlic. Give that a good stir. Then add a bay leaf, mm-hmm. teaspoon of basil. That could be dried or 3 teaspoons fresh. 1 teaspoon of marjoram, which is kind of an interesting dry spice, but very dry herb. It's very available. 1/2 teaspoon of oregano. And 1 teaspoon of salt. So those things go in with the vegetables. And again, give them a good stir. So you cover that and give it about 10 minutes simmering, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, medium, low to medium, somewhere in there. Kind of check it. You don't want it ferociously boiling.
Right.
Okay. Then take the cover off. And while it's been, simmering away, you've been slicing up zucchini or yellow squash. I used yellow squash in this just because it was kind of a pretty fall color, but you could use anything. And then 2 medium tomatoes cut in chunks. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. I couldn't use local tomatoes, so I opened a 14.5-ounce can of tomatoes. Diced tomatoes, you can have green chilies with them, you can have plain. Buy your favorite canned tomatoes since you can't get them local very much right now. Although we will have a few at market on Saturday. Okay, so like I said, you've let that first mix simmer. Take the cover off, add your sliced squash and your tomatoes, give it another stir. And at this point, the eggplant, one of the things it does is it thickens up the stew a little bit. So you take a look at it and you decide if you want it more soupy or you want it more of a thick stew. And if you want it a little bit more soupy, then add a little bit of water or a little bit of wine, give it another stir, and give it 10 more minutes. Then you're done.
Really?
So basically, you know, from start to finish with the prep in there, taste the veggies. Some people like their veggies a little crunchier in the stew, but those times will give you a very nice fall stew, and it looks, as we'll lift off the lid in a moment, it looks very fall. It's got orange and it's got green and red and, you know, kind of, it's just a great fall thing.
Well, here, so, let's have some fall market stew.
Great. Okay. We'll just scoop it up here.
Oh, it looks delicious.
Yeah.
You just took off the lid. And
I'm going to go ahead and let you scoop out what you'd like there, and you can kind of stir it around and see all the different colors in there. But like I said, it's a very nice autumnal stew.
Well, this is perfect for fall.
Yeah. So we'll see what you think of this. It's always, you know, a little risky sharing a recipe with somebody.
Oh, it smells delicious.
Yeah.
Mmm. That's good.
Good.
It's
yeah.
Very good.
See, there's a lot of different flavors in there, but not hopefully not too overwhelming. And the texture, again, the eggplant gives a nice texture and thickness, but it doesn't overwhelm the other things that are in there.
And you're right about the eggplant. This is a good intro if you've never done eggplant because it's very inconspicuous here.
Exactly right. As I said, if you could just get people to close their eyes and taste eggplant, it is wonderful. But in here, it just blends right in with the other colors and flavors.
We're going to have this recipe on the website.
We will.
And you're going to come back a week from today when we'll have more details about the award ceremony the 13th at the Farmer's Market.
Exactly.
Teresa, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
Oh, and if people want to know more about Slow Food in the Ozarks?
Oh, yeah. OzarksSlowFood.org. And actually, we've been making some improvements to our website, and we just got a new logo. So you'll get to see that. And there's, of course, you can always sign up for our free newsletter.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
October is the month of KUAF's fall campaign. All contributions made during this month count toward KUAF's fall campaign goal. Show your support today at KUAF.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 5th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of the philosopher of the French Enlightenment, Denis Diderot, born in Langres, France, in 1713. A good friend of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, they met regularly at cafes in Paris to talk about music and philosophy and their troubles with women. Diderot was the chief editor of Encyclopedia, the first book of its kind, a reference book, to subject all of the entries to rational analysis. For example, the entry on Noah's Ark tried to estimate how many man-hours Noah and his sons must have spent shoveling manure off the boat. He wrote about coal mines and fleas, about duels, bladder surgeries, stockings, metaphysics, and how to make soup. It was Denis Diderot who said, "Man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest." It's the birthday of Helen Churchill Candie, born in New York City, 1858, who wrote a how-to guide in 1900 entitled How Women May Earn a Living. She had to do that after her husband became so abusive that she had to leave him with her two children. She wrote books about the decorative arts, a novel, moved to Washington, and became an interior decorator. She was in Europe early in 1912 and sailed back home on the Titanic on its maiden voyage, was rescued aboard lifeboat number 6, and wrote all about it for Collier's Weekly magazine. And it's the birthday of the rocket scientist Robert Goddard, born in Worcester, Massachusetts, 1882. He was inspired by H.G. Wells's The War of the Worlds to try firing rockets. Made a liquid-fueled rocket in 1914, and then one that ran on solid fuel. On this date in 1926, he completed his first successful launch. The New York Times made fun of him back in 1926, and in 1969, after Apollo 11 left for the moon, the Times printed an apology. But Goddard had been dead for 24 years. Here's a poem for today by Diane Ackerman, Come Picnic on Mars, for Zoe, age 5. On a distant glad November when our hearts are running high and the dream bats all have vanished into the limestone of the sky, why don't we take a fiery stroll straight up to Mars, just you and I? We will pack a mental picnic for years before we go. Some will say the sky's the limit, but we will answer no. The mind was made to travel. So too indentured hearts and knitted fears unravel with adventure in the dark. A world of blues will slowly dwindle as Mars glows round the bend. The differences that blind us will bind us in the end. For wonder is the chorus that makes us all a choir. And time will not forgive us if slugabeds we lie fat and bored and cranky in our hammock in the sky. So come and take the waters that jet across the seas that lie between the planets we crawl to on metal knees. Oh, when we arrive, what fancy stuff we'll see, the swooning sands of paradise, dust devils, a volcanic sea. Then when twilight falls, by double moon, we'll feast on Ratatouille. Come Picnic on Mars, a poem by Diane Ackerman from Jaguar of Sweet Laughter, published by Vintage Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012 at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KUAF is provided by the 7th Annual Cherokee Art Market, featuring 130 Native American artists, along with interactive cultural demonstrations, October 13th and 14th, inside Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tulsa. More information is available at CherokeeArtMarket.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Hayes Chapel.
Hayes Chapel?
Yes.
Where is Hayes Chapel?
It is south of Clarksville. Just a little bit.
All right. Tonight is opening night. Also the penultimate night, since it's a two-show run, for the Gridiron Show. Tell us,
yes,
you are in it?
I am in it.
It's the annual show that is written by local journalists about newsmakers, dancing, singing. Dress rehearsal was last night. How'd it go?
I think it went pretty well, actually. We had a good-sized crowd, you know, worked out a couple of last-minute kinks, which is what that is for.
Right.
I feel pretty good about it. I hope that doesn't jinx us or anything, knock on wood. It's a good time. There was a lot of laughing. There's lots of things to laugh at. I feel like the writers have done a good job of layering the jokes. So if you maybe don't get the political reference, you're going to get the slapstick, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So I feel like it's funny for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. But it's such a good time. And it raises money for scholarships. So, you know, you can get a $25 ticket and, you know, you're doing your good deed for the day.
Also, some of the proceeds go to the building fund at Rogers Little Theater as well. So, speaking of Rogers, big weekend because you've got Gridiron at Rogers Little Theater in downtown. Mm-hmm. Rogers, then tomorrow for most of the daylight hours, if we have daylight, it's the International Festival in downtown Rogers.
Yes, I've been to that. It's a good time. Lots of different cultures, lots of different dances and foods and just all sorts of stuff. It's very interesting.
So you got all of that. Mm-hmm. The Offshoot Film Festival continues.
Yes.
Tom Green is at the York Bowl.
Yes.
For two more shows tonight.
Yes. I mean, what
33 else? Variations at the University of Arkansas Theater is closing out this weekend.
The Wiener Takes All races that yes. Becca had mentioned. I'm going to that before Gridiron on Saturday.
That's in Bella Vista?
It is in Bella Vista, where my friend and I are borrowing a dog because I don't have a Wiener dog.
Really? You're going to have a...
We're going to borrow... Yeah, one of her friends is going to let us borrow her dog.
Very good. Also, quickly a reminder that some programming changes beginning tomorrow on KUAF. Wait, don't tell me. Uh-huh. Now, Saturday mornings at 9. Car Talk guys have retired, so Wait is now Saturday at 9.
Okay.
Now, where Wait used to be, mm-hmm. Sundays at noon, mm-hmm. that's the TED Radio Hour.
Oh, okay.
So that is there. Also, Robert Ginsberg, who is the host of Shades of Jazz,
yes.
has been the host of Shades of Jazz for 20-plus years,
oh, wow,
25, 26.
Uh-huh.
Now on two nights. He'll still be on tonight from 10 until midnight, and beginning Saturday night, he'll be on Saturday night as well, 10 until 1. So now 5 hours of Robert Ginsberg and Shades of Jazz every weekend.
Fantastic.
Yes.
These are all good things.
Yes. And if you didn't keep track of all of that.
Yes.
You can go to KUAF.com and the brand new weekend schedule is there.
Yes, it is.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Christina Thomas will be with me Sunday morning at 9 for weekend edition mm-hmm. of Ozarks at Large. Also Sunday morning, I'll be in Eureka Springs. I've been asked to talk to the Unitarians there.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to that.
And I have the show on Monday, and you and I will be back on Tuesday.
That is correct.
And one last pitch for people looking for things to do this weekend. Tonight and tomorrow at 7:30, Rogers Little Theater, Northwest Arkansas Gridiron Show. $25 for tickets. The governor's coming tonight if you want to pick a night.
There you go.